a story is not what you say it is. I think so many people want it to be that. But a story is what people hear it is and then share, right? And so I think that's one of the huge benefits to getting feedback early and often, even if you are working on your own creative writing and it's fiction. Let's say you're putting all this detail into the character development, the plot, and the situation, all this stuff, but really you want it to be, it's about jealousy, or it's about whatever. If you're putting all that effort into it, and then you share it with someone, and that's not what they're picking up at all, then what was the point?
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Austin Meyer Podcast. I'm your host, Austin Meyer. I'm a documentary filmmaker and photographer, and on this show, I interview the world's best storytellers in all sorts of genres about how they craft the stories they tell. This week on the show, my guest is Seamus Hart. I met Seamus when I was doing my graduate studies in journalism at Stanford. At the time, and still to this day, Seamus was teaching storytelling at the Stanford Design School. And when I had the honor to be in one of his classes or workshops, he really made me rethink how I craft stories. Or I guess how he would say, how I design stories. A little bit of background on Seamus. Seamus studied sound design at SAE Expression College before getting an MFA in documentary film from Stanford University. He then went on to work this job on something called the John Lennon Educational Bus. We get into that all in the episode. It's super fascinating. And today, he is the co-founder of Only People Media and teaches at the Stanford D School. Some of the courses he has taught include Creative Gym, Movie Design, Story Viz, Building Innovative Brands, and a class called Abstract to Concrete. From Yoko Ono to David Kelly to will.i.am, Seamus has had the opportunity to teach and learn from some of the most creative people in the world. And I'm excited to share the wisdom that he has gained from all those people, and including his own life experience that he's now kind of synthesized into an amazing perspective on storytelling. Quick PS before we start the show, stick around for the outro of the episode to hear how you can enter my holiday giveaway, which I just launched this week, of an amazing camera bag from Think Tank Photo. Okay, let's rock. I hope you enjoy this episode with Seamus Hart. Check levels, check, check. Seamus Hart, welcome to the Austin Meyer Podcast. You're kicking it off after we've been on a little short hiatus here on the podcast, so there's no better way to start. Yeah,
bringing it back?
Well, we're bringing it back. I was traveling a bit and taking a little break unintentionally. But now we're coming back stronger than ever. So thank you for being here to kick that off.
I feel like I feel like it's not even a comeback. I feel like you've been asking me nicely for some time now. I feel like that's on me for slacking.
And we finally found some time. It is late on a Friday night.
It is.
We've spent most of the day together.
We have.
Down at Stanford University. And then you're kind enough to invite me over to this very creative space we're in here.
There's a lot of stories around here.
Yeah. So why don't you describe this space a little bit for the audience so they feel like they're here with us.
Okay. So we are in a a tiny little maybe 16 by 10 backyard cabin that has no heating, no plumbing. And it has become my little man cave as the family continues to grow.
Yeah.
And really it's almost like if, it's as if it's collected a bunch of narrative plaque.
What do you mean by that?
So in every phase of my life, I've had some sort of room. They've been as like small as bunks on a tour bus. Mm-hmm. Right? Or my first apartment, or when I moved to San Francisco, there was like a tiny little ridiculously small room that they call the second bedroom and charge you an outrageous price for. That was also kind of like my office. And they've always just kind of had these explosions of my thinking process, right? I never like really had a method. Like as you can, like it's interesting, but it's clearly not organized in here. Right? Mm. I think that's a fair.
Gotcha.
And now, as I've gotten older, right, and my ability to even find time playing around with this stuff is less and less. It's like kind of like this buildup, right? So there's stuff that I'm clearly working on, like, so you can kind of see like an entire
wall full of paper.
Paper that has what we call the good book, and it's essentially kind of how I've been thinking about shaping and communicating the culture of a media company. Mm-hmm. And then you have, you know, on the back, you have a War is Over poster that is signed by Yoko Ono.
All right.
Given to me over a decade ago.
Wow.
Which there's like so many stories to unpack there. You have, I don't know, the back door has all of the tour badges.
Okay.
And so it's like these things that are kind of these artifacts around story, and then some literal stories. There's a ton of books here, bunch of half-baked ideas.
But so you mentioned that you, as your family has been growing.
Yeah.
So you have a 2.5-year-old
correct
daughter who we had
yes
a late lunch with, who is
yes
so fabulous, and then you have a new child on the way.
I do.
I'm
yeah
curious how being a father
yeah
has impacted your creative life.
I think it's helped in bringing focus with finite resources. So I think, you know, when you're in your teens and then 20s, the world is your oyster, so to speak. And you can find a style or a voice. You can try on a bunch of different things, right? Media, it's talking within like the kind of creative space. And once you have less and less time to allocate to those things, you have to just prioritize what those projects are going to be, right? So like I'm a huge collaborator. Like I love getting involved with other people and working with other people. And I think one of my strengths is also being able to see things, meaning like they have an idea and I can see how it can come to life. And so that's a blessing and that's a curse, because then you kind of get addicted to flaring and to constantly coming up with ideas and how things can go. And now I've had to shift into saying like, okay, I totally get it, right? Like even in conversations with you about some of the projects you're working on, like there's so many things where I'm like, oh, I can totally see I could do this. But then I have to be like, and that's not my game, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's like, you're doing you.
Yeah.
Here, I'm going to stay in my lane. Here's the things that I'm kind of honing in on.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know that I have this certain window during the day to get stuff done. And then I'm going to go home. I'm going to hang out with my family. We're going to have dinner. I'm going to read some books with my daughter, put her to bed. And then if we got a pocket of time in there, hop on a friend's podcast.
right?
Like, so it's like you have to prioritize those things. And so only people and a few other projects that I'm kind of working on now are like they've helped me kind of really focus in on doing work that only I could do.
Hmm.
And so I think that's kind of, I'm in a pretty big transition period in my life right now with second kid due literally any moment now.
Yeah, we're ready.
Yeah, we're ready. We got the
we're
phones.
Ready to
the
go.
Phones are not on mute.
Nope.
If I get the call right now.
We're
okay.
Going.
And so, yeah. And I've always had that vision. Like I always wanted to do things that only I could do, but I think it just requires a lot more time.
Yeah.
And experience and connections and
yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Well, how did you find what it is that only you can do?
So I think it kind of comes to like figuring out your own story. Right. And I think people want, when you're young, you're kind of filled with all this energy and passion towards certain things. And I think that's great. And that was certainly me. But until you kind of have a because of that moment. So okay. if we're talking about story spine.
So why don't we just run the audience through what the story spine is?
I think you might actually be a better...
Well, we can riff on it together.
Okay. Is it Ken Adams? Is it like, so let's just say it was Ken Adams. Are we allowed to Google on this?
Yeah, I mean, I could drop it in the show notes later.
Okay.
If people want to follow up with resources.
I believe it's Ken Adams.
Okay.
And he was an improv teacher, mm-hmm. and he came up with a structure that has become known as story spine. And what I love about it, as you know, with improv, people think it's like this blank page.
Right.
Right? And it's things are constantly riffing. Like, how can you be so creative all the time? When in actuality, what's happening is like the story is honing. There are more and more constraints happening with every action that is created, right? So like if you walk in and someone says, oh, welcome to my ham shop, like now there is a situation where you went from blank page to someone knowing that there's, you're in a ham shop.
Right, now we have a world.
Right, and so like with every action, something is kind of, more and more constraints are brought into that world. And so story spine is a kind of narrative roadmap that if you have that in the back of your mind as an improv artist, you know that you can riff with someone and allow things to unfold, but you also kind of know what a next plot point needs to head towards in order to make a what you might call like a timeless story arc, which is essentially act one, act two, act three. And in story spine, it is once upon a time, and every day until one day, and I kind of that's kind of like the act one, and then you kind of go because of that, because of that, because of that, until one day, right? Which kind of gets you. So the because of that is kind of like act two, and then until one day is kind of like
until finally,
right? Is you're introducing the resolution and maybe a moral of the story, or every day after that, or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. When I think about my life through story spine. You don't really get to pick the act one. You don't get to pick the once upon a time, right? I was born in Michigan and to my parents, right? There was no like, I didn't pick that state. I didn't pick my parents. I didn't pick siblings. I didn't pick any of that stuff. I didn't pick kind of like the and every day, right? You kind of fall into that situation. And until you have some sort of inciting incident, right? I think you're kind of just making things up.
Okay.
And so...
So in the story spine, you have once upon a time and every day.
Yep.
And you're saying the inciting incident being until one day. Thing that kicks the story into motion.
Yep.
This is why we are following this story. So for you, that inciting incident, what was that
for
you?
So I think there's a lot.
Okay.
And I think there can... And if you apply that framework, so I was... I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes when I was 24. So that's a oddly, usually type 1 diabetes, you get diagnosed much younger, right? So it was very strange for me to be diagnosed at that time. And I remember thinking to myself like that was a, you know, okay, until one day. And now because of that, so how am I going to react, right? Like this is now a part of my story and how am I going to react, right? And rather than being frustrated about it or being angry about it. And when I talk about then doing work that only I could do, when you think about your identity and those kind of inciting incidents, saying, okay, anyone can teach design workshops, right? But when I bring in more elements of my identity that have like these kind of inciting incidents and these opportunities for because of that, if I say, okay, I'm a type 1 diabetic and I actually see a lot of the design abilities that you need to be a successful designer also just happen in having to be a capable diabetic, right? And so, okay, that's really interesting. And as I shift into that, I can authentically own that story and narrative around that work.
Right.
And that's something that only I can do, right? And so some people have one arc and that work. Some people have many, right? But I think the idea is to get involved in things that only you can authentically own because they had some sort of until one day.
Right.
Or until one day where you kind of like, oh, this happened and now that's why I'm doing this. And even like Only People, right?
Yeah.
That is a John Lennon song. And the whole narrative around a media company, I could have easily made a media company.
As a reminder for the audience, Only People is Seamus's media company.
Yes, that's, yes. Thank you. I could have easily made a video production crew.
Okay.
Or company, right? And then you're just kind of competing on price or process or whatever it is. But knowing what we know about story and how people are kind of lured in by the narrative, not only of what they want to create, but even what you're selling yourself, even as a story company. Only People being tied to John Lennon and Yoko Ono and the work they did around their honeymoon to help sell the idea of peace, right, was a much better angle for me to shape a company and the culture and the ethos of that company around it. And that's something that I can authentically own because I spent time on board a tour bus that was all about the life, work, and legacy of John and Yoko.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's different than someone that's just owns a bunch of DSLRs and wants to make media. Right. Right. And so I'm like constantly looking for those moments, whether it's in the work stuff, whether it's in family stuff, where what was that until one day? And then how can I shape because of that? Because that's that, in my opinion, like just like the, in Story Spine, the way that ends, like I don't have a choice. I could get hit by a bus tomorrow. Right. Right? And like that, as much as we want control over closing the narrative, yeah, it's really just this series of because of that's,
yeah,
that we can own. And finding a really good until one day is until one day, I think that's just like that's what makes us interested when we're watching something on Netflix or Hulu or whatever it is whatever the kids are watching these days. Right, like if you don't get to an interesting until one day,
the twist that starts the story puts that it in really emotion.
Gets you if you don't get where you're like connected, you have empathy for the main character and you relate to their motivations and you want to see how they overcome it.
Yeah.
Then you change the show, right? Like you bail.
Yeah. Well, thinking about this question of like, what's your unique voice? What we're kind of getting at, the only thing that you can do. Mm-hmm. I've been thinking about this a lot lately because, you know, I always have my eye out for stories, but I'm particularly have an eye out for like my next big project. Mm-hmm. And a number of my last projects, I didn't have like I don't think I was the only one that could have done it. Mm-hmm. And the documentaries that I'm looking up to so much right now are ones that, you know, the person has just amazing access. Mm-hmm. Stylistically, they feel very unique. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to figure out a lot of times right now is the story that I can tell, that only I can tell. Mm-hmm. The ones that come to mind are like, oh, it's about like the Santa Rosa fires because I currently live in Santa Rosa.
Yep.
But then I also like want to live other places too. So I think I'm still searching for that voice and that style that can kind of transcend topic.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
It does, and I think I don't know. Are we allowed to brag on your partner a little bit right now?
Sure.
Can I? Well, so one of the things that I like about your approach to that is that I think you're doing exactly what that creative, curious people need to be doing in their 20s, right? Is like trying on all those different things.
Yeah.
Right. Like I didn't have that clear of a vision. Like I knew I wanted to do that stuff just like you do, but I didn't know what it was yet. Mm-hmm. And what I like is that some people, they never have it. They never have an inciting incident, and they never like create one.
Yeah.
Right. And some people, it's like, my parents were killed by a drunk driver when I was 14. Mm. Right. And so that is a huge, huge moment in your life, and you're now dedicated towards, you know, a nonprofit that brings awareness to drunk driving or whatever it is, right? I didn't necessarily, like, the diabetes one was one like that, but for those other things, like the Lennon bus and these other things, like, it's more like just constantly hacking.
Yeah.
Right? And just being like, I'm gonna keep on doing shit right. until, like, something turns up. And I think that's the thing where when you take that approach, I think it's great because you get to try in a bunch of different stuff, but then it also just takes longer to, like, synthesize
what that
stuff is.
So let's dive into your past a little bit as a storyteller and some of, like, those key moments for you when you were developing this framework and voice and vision around this combination of using design thinking and storytelling and kind of blending those together in a really unique way. So what were some of, like, the foundational experiences that you had as a storyteller?
So, yeah, great question. I think I have to, like, back it up quite a bit.
Okay.
Fifth or sixth grade. Because I had no idea about design or even storytelling. In I think it was fifth or sixth grade, I remember my parents had, they're in their bedroom. They kind of had a bed that was, like, elevated a little bit. And there was this kind of, like, nook on the side of one, and, like, where my dad's side of the bed was. And there was always, like, water and candy and things like that. And, like, that's where me and my sister would sit and kind of watch TV with my parents. And one night, a docuseries, I guess you'd call it now, the anthology on the Beatles was, like, on CBS or NBC or something like that. And it was basically this documentary series that showed the Beatles in how they became the Beatles. And it was more about them working in the studio and how they put stuff out. And it was released within an album, like a three double albums, right? And it was none of their releases, it was all of their tracks of, like, the process of them working in the studio. And I was just so in awe of not just, like, these four guys making music. Like, it was the tangible thing was the music, but the intangible thing was an ability to shape culture. And because I didn't understand that as a fifth grader, and it was like music was, like, it kind of, like, created this love for music and the ability to, like, really connect with people and find a voice and share it. And so that kind of got squashed out because my family wasn't musical, wasn't really, art wasn't even really a thing. And it was kind of suppressed until I got into college and I bought a guitar and I started, like, trying to, like, write poetry. And I was like, oh, it's really lyrics. And I was, like, learning how to play music. And as I was really struggling with who I wanted to be in Michigan, I kind of end up, like, just realizing that I needed to get out of there. And I literally Googled music in California.
Yep.
Or music production. I'm sorry. Music production in California.
Yeah.
And a college popped up called Expression College of Digital Arts. It was in Emeryville, California. And I knew nothing about California. And I was like, Emeryville, I wanted to be in LA or San Francisco or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And it turns out Emeryville's, like, smack in the middle of kind of a triangle of Berkeley, Oakland, and San Francisco. So, like, if you're going to be, you know, jumping all the way across the country, it's a great spot to land. That landed me into music, right? Like, I moved a month later and I was studying music and learning how to play, but I wasn't a very good musician, but I could kind of produce and I got these ideas. I was able to, like, start figuring out how to get ideas out of my head. That actually got me 2 years later in that program, I landed a job on the John Lennon Educational Tour Bus, nonprofit mobile recording studio, travels all across the country working with students to help them explore their imagination through the inspiration of John Lennon's life and legacy, right?
That must have been pretty cool as
it was insane.
As you were such a big Beatles fan.
I had a huge Imagine poster above my bed at that time. It was like nuts. And I was in a very serious relationship. And even she knew. She was like, you have to take this job. Yeah, you gotta go. So I took that, and that experience, you're in Cleveland one night and then Detroit, you know, you wake up in Detroit.
It's like, right? You're on a tour bus.
You are. You're living, working on a tour bus. But what was crazy at that time, and so excited, I'm like 22 or 23 at this time.
Okay.
I was hired to make music. I lied about the fact that I could make video. It's very clear that that is a role of the gig. But I just picked it up as fast as I could. And essentially you're making a music, like a group of students come on board the bus. You have 8 hours to write and record an original song with them and make a music video.
Wow.
Right? It's just like a medium microwave. And so what really ended up being the most incredible thing for me to pull out of that isn't the hard skills of like learning Final Cut Pro or Pro Tools. Like that was absolutely amazing. But really what was happening was their design sprints, right? So I'm able to go through the creative process with a bunch of strangers, understand how do I use status in, how do I help people collaborate? How do I get them from ideation, you know, to execution in all of this? And what was so great about that is for the people on board that bus and in that moment, they never forget that moment. And what was so great for me is that I was able to forget that moment the next day, meaning whatever I fucked up,
yeah,
I could learn from in 12 hours.
Right.
So how I learned how to direct is literally days in a row where I'd have to direct music videos with kids, and you would learn right away, like, oh, that doesn't work. When I approach someone, they totally freeze, or this happens or that happens. And so whatever happened on Monday, you had a new group of people that were just jazzed to come on board the bus, and then you could apply all of your new learnings.
Wow. Right? An amazing amount of like reps.
An insane amount of reps.
Insane. It probably drove you crazy at some point.
I mean, it's just, yeah, it's absolutely not a sustainable lifestyle.
Yeah.
But in terms of training, it was incredible. And I went from music to then realizing, like, oh my God, it's all of these mediums. And so I still wasn't tuned in yet to story or design. I was like, it was about music. And then it was like, oh, but if I'm learning how to make these videos, and videos are a medium that can capture so much more information, and I can have music in them, and I can also write stuff, and I can use visuals. I'm being exposed to that while also touring during 2007, 2008, 2009. And so what's happening there is the economy is about to crash, right? So I'm cruising across the country while right before and then during the Great Recession. The iPhone is about to be released, right? And so and Obama's about to be elected. And so like all of these crazy things are happening that are like just starting to turn my head more to social issues. Still not dialed in yet to like how narrative works or how story works, but being like, oh, there's something interesting about making media, and I'm starting to become way more socially aware and really excited about technology with its ability to democratize these tools.
With the iPhone, things like that.
Yeah. And so, like, again, I'm not aware, like, these things are happening.
Right.
But I'm not totally aware that I'm like in this perfect storm.
Mm-hmm.
I get off the bus. I'm diagnosed with type 1 diabetes actually while I'm on tour. So that was like, you can't live on a tour bus for that long without accepting and addressing that. So I was like, lifestyle need to change. Jumped off the bus. and just trying to figure out, like, how do I even process? And so this is what we were talking about earlier, where it's like, it wasn't like I had this great vision and I was just executing. It was right. more like I had a hunger and I was going after things, but then I needed way more time than my brain was really willing to accept to synthesize those things and see what a next step is. Mm-hmm. So I'm basically unemployed. I quit my job on a nonprofit mobile recording studio. So you're like, we're already getting just a few bucks. But I had a job during the Great Recession.
Yeah.
In my mind, I think I'm making a great move because I was in a relationship moving back to San Francisco. And so I quit my job, moved back in with my girlfriend at the time, and I have like zero plan. So I'm trying to figure out what to do, what happens next. I got really excited about education and like helping people and making documentaries, and I didn't really know.
Because of the Lennon Bus, you were educating people. Because of the Lennon Bus.
Like, so right. went from music to yeah. like making media to education and teaching people about yeah. social issues and how they can become active in it. And like,
all
just
these pieces
like, I'm just like
floating
and things are gaining momentum. And I'm teaching summer camps at Stanford for a company called Digital Media Academy. And it's just like music video camps.
Uh-huh.
And I meet a woman who's also teaching there, and she's in the Stanford MFA program for documentary film. And I'm like, oh, and then, so I'm like thinking about that. And then I'm like thinking about Stanford, and I also see the D school through kind of my research now. I'm like, oh, that is actually really interesting. Like,
yeah. The D school is the design school for.
Yes.
Those who
don't
know. Yeah.
And so that is, I'm excited about that, and then I quickly find that you're not able to apply directly to become a grad student there, right? You have to be a grad student in a program. I was a terrible student in undergrad. I'm like, okay, so I need to get into Stanford,
right?
To like play around with this, the way that people are teaching and learning there, right? But I also love the story stuff, and so like, how am I mixing all these things together? Long story short, I apply to the MFA program because I have a portfolio of a ton of work from the Lennon Bus that could potentially get me in versus like trying to get in through the School of Education or something else where I'd have to show my academic prowess, which was not going to happen. So I get in and I'm now spending 2 years in grad school really for the first time like honing in on story.
Okay.
And it was incredibly frustrating because I felt like on a technical side of things, I was in a cellar, meaning things were out, like things were moving so fast when I was literally on a tour bus.
Yeah.
And having all the new tech come my way. So really excited about that, but then really frustrated in the program, but then also getting like an incredible just 2 years of watching, you know, films, like right. multiple films a day,
yeah,
writing papers about it, trying to break them down, reverse engineer them, figure out how they work. And in addition to that, taking a bunch of classes at the D school. And so the D school classes didn't apply to my program. So I'm like taking credit. So like I'm taking like 21, 22 units.
Yeah, a lot.
A lot of units. And just like killing myself, right? Trying to get this stuff done. And get exposed to like this idea of design and how do you take a human-centered approach to storytelling. And so like again, it's like now you have music that morphed into film and video that morphed into like, oh, actually it's story. Mm-hmm. Story's the thing, and you can pick your medium.
Okay.
Right. And like, so now I'm thinking about that. And then it's like, oh, actually, what's this thing about design? Design's really cool and the way they're working, and like these quick iterative ways to get feedback instead of like working on your film by yourself for months and like being really protective of it and trying to figure out how to. Like,
so let's define design just to as we get into this D school in this chapter of your
yeah.
life. Like, what is the design school and you were referring to design and yeah. how that relates to story. What is design?
So design in kind of, coming from someone now in the D school and the way I think and teach about it is essentially methods to the madness, the seemingly madness of creative problem solving and problem finding, right? And so, but there's methods in there where you're getting feedback early and often, and you're creating prototypes that are super scrappy, and you're listening to what people want and really getting to what people need, and then getting to what people don't even know that they need, and you're reframing things the whole way through. And in a lot of ways, a documentary film, right, versus a fiction film, there's a lot of design elements in there, right? You're going with the flow. You start down one path, and then you have to like reframe it because the story changed.
Yeah.
And you're kind of being, you're working in this moment. So I saw a lot of parallels right away, and I was really excited about it, but I still didn't know how to make them connect. But I knew these things were kind of stacking up now, again, with like, you had mediums, what I'd say, like the music, the film, the photography. Then you had these things that are like a little bit deeper and a bit more intangible with storytelling and then design. And the semester before I graduated, there was a class that have ended up becoming an entire project called Stanford 2025. And it was the university asked the D school to look at what does living and learning look like at Stanford in the year 2025 and beyond.
Okay.
And I was a student in that class, and I had, like I said, a very nonlinear college experience. So I was actually really excited because that I identified with kind of reshaping college. But it was a stacked teaching team. Like all of the people now that like lead the D school were on that teaching team. And I was just really excited to learn from them. And they ended up offering me a job to help them kind of get on this project and tell the stories of the project, right? Because they didn't want to release another white paper. They were like, oh, it's going to be like, maybe we'll do some documentary films or something. Huge moment and opportunity, right? That ended up being just a complete mess in terms of like the project was great, right? And but like that was the first time I was colliding. I was at the intersection of storytelling and design thinking.
Yeah,
and
you were telling stories of a design process.
Telling stories of a design process, but also taking something that on, you know, you have something that's a bit more linear and kind of set up. So you go through the pre-production process and the production process, then post-production, and people aren't used to doing things, media prototypes, right? Like, yeah, you do storyboarding, but that's actually a ton of work, and it's not even in the medium you're going to end up working in.
Right.
Right? And so again, there were things there, but it just wasn't up to speed, right? And so then I'm working with these world-class designers that are like, no, we want to change this, we want to tinker this, and like they're just like flying at a million miles an hour to try to tinker with things. And so a lot of the methods, like methods needed to be created that allowed us to work at a speed that the world was now running at, right?
Okay.
And so a small example of that, again, is like if you think of a film from Pixar when they were very first doing that, or any film that's animated, right? Like you're drawing out every single frame and you're storyboarding that, and there's an incredible amount of effort and an incredible amount of time putting into like visualizing that thing before you actually go into animating it, right?
Okay.
Now, if you take that same idea, and you're not even in a film then, right? You're like, you're not even in the medium, right? And so like that's the thing that... If I was, you know, we're looking at this, all this paper on the wall right now. If I'm trying to walk you through that story.
Yeah.
If you wanted to glance down towards the end, your eyes could.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I'm not fully in control of your attention.
Okay.
Right. Hmm. Whereas like when you're watching a film and, you know, and when you've directed that film, you get to pick the music that's unfolding and what they get to see next.
Right.
So how are you actually able to prototype content if it's not unfolding in the medium in a time-based way? And so if you take your phone, you take a, you know, your smartphone, and you grab a bunch of post-it notes and you jot down the basic arc of your idea, and you now film that rather than walking someone through those pieces of paper where they could actually see the end. If you film it, you now have it in a medium, a time-based medium that allows it to unfold in the way that you have control as the storyteller, right?
Gotcha.
And you're able to see whether or not that thing's going to work, right? So what I mean by that is when I'm telling you a story in person, mm-hmm. I'm reading you, right? And so if you look lost, I'm adjusting.
Yeah.
Or if you look bored, I'm going to spice it up or whatever it is, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Hopefully I do that. And the reality is when you're making a film, you don't have that opportunity. You have to know that like what you baked into that, you know, 90-minute thing, 2-hour thing, whatever, it works,
right?
And it needs to work without you in that room, because mm-hmm. you can't be whispering into the person's ear. Like if you did something that's supposed to be funny or they didn't get it, or as you're already doing right now and kind of making commentary about what people wouldn't understand, oh, the D school is this or whatever it is, right? You're making sure that's baked in.
Yeah.
Doing a prototype in that time-based medium allows you to test that out, right? And so figuring that out and playing with those things and then realizing like, hey, this is a new way of working at that intersection of storytelling and design. It was a mess making that happen in that project, but in all the best ways, because we were literally chartering new territory.
Right. So if I can jump in and kind of summarize that little part and make
Please
sure I'm
do.
Understanding. So when you're on the Stanford 2025 project, you're working with all these designers and you're like the doc film story guy that comes on this team.
Yep.
And suddenly all the things that you need to capture into a story is the super messy process. You're working like super fast.
Yep.
All these different minds. And
in mediums that aren't in the one that I need to put it in.
Right. And so you started figuring out, how do I adapt my creative process or my storytelling process to work more quickly, to work more fluidly, and allow it to capture the beautiful mess that is a design process.
Yeah, I would say that's right. And I would add that the intent isn't to work more quickly for the sake of working more quickly. The intent is to work quickly to get feedback early and often to figure out how to hone that story even, you know, better, faster.
Okay, so let's get a little bit more specific on that. What is the traditional way in which a filmmaker or storytellers like prototype their stories and get feedback?
What's the traditional way?
Yes.
I mean, I can speculate.
Well, I mean,
because I think my experience in film is that you would, there's just an incredible amount of excitement and passion, but then insecurity and fear in like getting a film out of you. It's just like a real, like any art, right? It's like really, really difficult to get that thing out. And so when it's art and it's like, that's something that's like, that is coming from inside of you, sharing that with someone early and often is just a, some people don't even get to that phase.
Totally.
Right? And it is incredibly difficult just to get there. And then it's even harder to make that productive. Mm. Right? And so some people, it's like they just avoid it the whole time. And it's like, my art is art and it's not for you. Mm-hmm. Right? And it's like, okay, that's... And then other people, like they're able to get there, but it takes a really long time. Right. And they don't want to show you something that's not perfect yet. Right. And so there's because it's going to speak for them and be from their soul, they want to make sure they get it completely dialed. And I get that. And I fight with that all the time. But then you're also not knowing, like, there's this compromise that needs to happen on the spectrum from art to design, where you need to bring some. You need to know like where that work sits on that spectrum.
Yeah.
And if it's truly just art and it's like you expressing yourself and you don't give a fuck about anyone, like, great. Then it doesn't matter what their feedback is.
Right.
But if you're trying to make a living off this thing and either sell it or figure out how to get service or whatever it is, you need to bring in those design elements to understand what people like, what people need and whatever it is. And the faster that you can do that, the better you can make that work and, you know, get somewhere to just like, okay, if I want to get to the level where I'm putting out, you know, if I want to win an Oscar or a Grammy or whatever it is, right? Like, there's certain things where you need to be like playing the game.
Yeah.
Right.
For the audience, in terms of like prototyping stories, I remember when I first worked with Seamus, this was a really interesting element to the process, because I come from like creative writing background. That's what I studied at Stanford. And it's the same thing. It's art. I studied fiction. Mm. Like, when I'm sitting there writing my short story, it's like, I don't want you to read this until it's like perfect. And I feel like a lot of people who are storytellers and consider themselves artists are like that.
Yep.
And then when I arrived at the design school, to see the power of sharing early prototypes, getting feedback, and then incorporating that feedback into your next iteration, mm-hmm. I was like, wow, this is so effective to mm-hmm. eventually get to the same goal as that I had the other way, which mm-hmm. is like to be the best I can be, or to create mm-hmm. the best story I can make. And so the first time I worked with Seamus, directing one of their videos, I remember like you were just telling me like the first day we had like the idea, like a potential idea of how the story was going to play out. I went home and you're just like, create a prototype, send me anything by the end of the day. Just like send me something to uh-huh. react to. And that's so different, but also it's so different than what most people would say to me mm-hmm. as a filmmaker. And also like, it was great because it allowed us to start exploring ideas mm-hmm. In a more tangible way than just kind of like sitting at a whiteboard, like drawing them. We got to feel it. We got to mm-hmm, sense mm-hmm. it in the medium that we actually work in. Mm-hmm. But it was kind of intimidating to like send the person who's paying me to work yeah. something where I'm just like sitting at my desk talking to an iPhone.
Right. And I'm like, wait, why am I paying him?
That's it.
No, I think that's totally right. And I think, something to add to that is, a story is not what you say it is. And I think so many people want it to be that. But a story is what people hear it is and then share, right? And so I think that's one of the huge benefits to getting feedback early and often, even if you are working on your own creative writing and it's fiction. Let's say you're putting all this detail into the character development, and the plot, and the situation, all this stuff, but really you want it to be, it's about jealousy, or it's about whatever, right? If you're putting all that effort into it, and then you share it with someone, and that's not what they're picking up at all, then what was the point, right? And so the earlier you can get that out to someone, and see how something from your brain got tossed out into the world, they picked it up, and there's, how's it making sense in their brain? And I think that's like, to me, that's what mediums are. They're ways for me to get something out of my head, make sense of it, and put it in your head, right? And that's how we connect through music or films or other things. It's like these mediums that are outside of our heads that we're like, yeah, I agree with that. And you're like, yeah, I agree with that. And so now that we have these tools, smartphones, that we can make media faster than ever, don't think of, like, right now we're using it for such crap, right? And I don't, like, we're so caught up in the instant media making bit, which there are certainly like fun elements of that, as we are both like Instagram people that love capturing those instant things.
Yeah.
But I think there's also like, people don't see it as that tool. Like, they pick up their phone and they don't think of this as a tool to prototype stories.
Yeah.
Right. They think if it's like, oh, well, if I make something with that, and like, they're putting way too much effort into making it to like put it up as a finished thing
yeah.
on Instagram, versus like, oh, actually I can make a really quick storyboard on post-it notes and read through my idea and film it. And then mm-hmm. I can text that to Austin and not say anything to him. Mm. And if he watches that video, and he's able to like pull things out of that.
Yeah.
Right. And make sense of it. Then I know that what I'm kind of working with, and even more, take that to another level. If I get the story and I have like the plot line or the basic idea, if I put if I take it one step further and put an audio track underneath okay. that. Now yeah. all of a sudden I added a layer of emotion, right? And I can test that and you'd be like, ooh, I really liked how that just felt ominous or spooky yeah. or whatever it is, right? And I'm like, okay, now I'm playing with that. And I could take that even another step forward. And let's say it's a video that's pitching an idea or there's characters and I name the person, right? Or I brand the idea. Now I'm able to prototype, like, did you even remember that person's name if I ask
right,
you about it?
Right.
Like, it was probably not a good character name. Or, you know, did you remember that it was... If I was working on deodorant and I was like, I'm gonna call it Old Spice, right? Like, did you remember that or not? And so like you're able to actually see what's sticking at an instant rate with your phone. And it's like, don't let that be the thing that's going out, but let that be the thing that's like going on, like while you're cruising through these reps.
I remember when one time you led an exercise that I was a part of at the D school, where you were trying to encourage us to prototype stories. And I think you had us like record a voice memo mm-hmm. telling a little, like a 1 minute, one mm-hmm. and a half minute story. And then we had to text it to like our moms. And then we would like follow up with them to see what they remembered.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know that was inspiring to me. And now when I'm actually going into making a new film or new project or, mm-hmm. or writing a new piece, I pay really close attention when I'm like just talking about it in conversation to people. It's mm-hmm. like that, it's like that's my little prototype.
Yes,
it's like absolutely. How do I actually just tell someone, one of my friends who's like, hey Austin, what are you working on right now?
Yeah,
it's like, what is the, when I say this story in 30 seconds to my friend who's kind of paying attention but mm-hmm. kind of watching the TV,
yeah,
like
yep.
what's the details that I focus in on to yep. get his attention?
Yep. What I love about that is kind of bringing it back into this design thing is that I feel like in the design process, storytelling is it's like how you even figure out what the problem is by like listening and hearing stories, right? It's your first prototype, right? Like you're prototyping right there. And then it is your final product. Even if you're making an app or a widget or whatever, what's really going to sell that app is people telling other people that that app is worth using, right? And it's like, that's like the brand and the narrative and everything. And that's something that I learned directly from David Kelly during the Stanford 2025 project when...
David Kelly, founder of... IDEO
and, yep.
and the Stanford Design School.
Legend and so he was kind of leading that team and he would kind of like, we had this tiny room, kind of similar to this room, maybe like twice the size, but that's not saying much. And it was just filled with all these ideas that we were playing around with. And every now and then he would like once a week kind of pop in that room and ask what are some of the big ideas and what we were working on. And what I like came to understand and realize is what he was doing is that was kind of the fish market, right? For him to like grab something that was kind of juicy from that project, see what was available while we were working on things. And then he was actually prototyping those with some of the much hot, you know, some of the deans of the engineering building or the president of the university. And like, they didn't even realize they were part of the prototype. But people would say, oh, what are you working on this project, right? And he'd be using these different stories. And then he would be able to come back to the team and share, hey, there's some traction here. Like when I talk about this idea, people light up, right? And so one of the taglines that I wrote for what ended up being called Open Loop University, which is this idea that universities should break away from this 4-year continuous learning experience and shift into this nonlinear 6-year experience where when you get accepted to a university, so let's say when you got accepted into Stanford undergrad, you got 6 years of education. And if you went to that first year and then you landed an awesome internship and you wanted to explore that for 2 years, you could kind of like take an off ramp.
Right.
Right. And then be like, I still got 4 years in the bank or 5 years, yeah. and I can come back to that. And so you're kind of like in a ripple effect, getting rid of grad school, getting rid of all these things where people are at these different points in their life trying to figure out how to like loop back into school or make a decision. So anyway, so the tagline to that was Stanford isn't just a time in your life, but a lifetime, right? And so it's this idea of shifting from that moment, that 4 years where it's like, oh yeah, back on the farm, right? And being like, no, like once you're kind of in, you're in, and wouldn't that be amazing? And what was great about that is that was one of those things that like really early on, we were just like riffing on a ton of things, right? And David picked up on the fact that like, hey, that thing, like people get it. Just saying that, people are like,
the tagline.
This is interesting. Yeah. And so like that's essentially like it's a tagline, but really what it is it's an invitation, it's a spark, it gets people's attention. And then you're able to have this much larger conversation about a really complex idea, which is like completely blowing up how we think of four-year universities.
Right, right.
Right. But that's what gets you in with that story, right? And so when he was able to prototype that through these conversations, not even using your phone, right? And that's exactly what you're saying is like, you can just kind of be using words. Don't even say to people, oh, I want to pitch something to you.
Yeah, right.
Just pay attention to people, which is, again, part of design. He's like, just say some stuff and pay attention to their body language, whether they're excited about that, whether they have more to say. And you're already prototyping right there whether or not you have something good. And if you're able to get momentum with that, with the audience that you are looking for in the end, right? So if you're looking for a really diverse crowd, then you're going to need something that appeals to a lot of people. If you're looking for something really, like I could say something, we're talking about diabetics, right? I could say something that appeals only to type 1 diabetics. And you're like, oh yeah, I get that, like inside jokes. But if you're looking for something that goes big, and there's not right or wrong, it's just knowing what you're trying to do with the audience and then prototype those things and see what's getting traction and bring that in. And there's that's almost like a stealth way of doing it.
Before I wrap up the main show here with the last question, I just wanted to once again revisit and kind of very specifically give a couple like tactical things people can do out there if they want to get practice prototyping stories. Maybe they're working on a speech right now, or they're working on a film, or they're writing something, or drawing something, whatever it is. What are some ways, let's give some tangible ways that people can practice prototyping stories and getting feedback so that you know that it's really hitting the audience with the message that you want to?
Yeah. What you had mentioned earlier with kind of just telling stories and not even bringing technology involved, I love that. But I actually think that actually takes quite a bit of expertise.
Okay.
And the reason for that is like you need to be able to check your ego and be aware of the situation and not try to alter, right? So like if your friend, you tell a story to your friend and they're not interested, you need to like, you can't change that story,
okay, right? You're right.
To try to get their attention or try to appeal to them.
Yeah.
And so it actually takes a bit more of expertise. And so I think the two things that I would suggest are, the one that I love to start with is voice memos.
Okay. So, right? How should people do this?
You open up your iPhone or Android, and most of them come with a native app, meaning it's pre-installed with some sort of voice recording software. And if you're trying to get an idea out of your head, and this is best for, you know, short ideas. We're talking like 60 second, maybe 2 minute things. Maybe it's a basic arc or a pitch or something. But we've kind of come accustomed to watching media in those little micro bits anyways. But it's the basic idea of something. Just simply recording that with the voice memo and then playing that for someone. And what that does for you as the storyteller is it removes you from any ability to readjust. And so, again, while you're telling a story live to your friend, you're sometimes not even consciously, you're not conscious about the reactions you're making, right? You might feel like a little nervous or insecure or whatever, so your body adjusts to like make that story so that you're connecting with that person.
Right.
Like that's what we want with stories. We want human connection. So if you're not getting it, you're going to adjust.
Yep.
when you have that recorded on your voice memo and you are playing that for the person and you are actually able to be in your own audience, right? I'm able to see how you are reacting to it and I don't have control over that. You have now created a situation very quickly and for free that allows you to get that feedback, not only from how they're reacting, but how you're reacting. And most of the time, you don't even need to get their feedback. Right, because your gut will tell you. Like let's say you're a comedian and you use that method to try out different bits, you would know right away if that thing was bombing or not, right? You don't need to be like, so was it funny? Right, yeah. Right? Like you don't have to ask. If you have to ask, you're in trouble.
Right.
Right. And so I think the voice memo way is so easy. And what I love about that is you can also text that, as you mentioned earlier. Like you can text it to your mom, you can text it to a friend, and you could text them some context, right? If you want.
Yeah.
But you could also just text them nothing. And if they're able to text you back, I mean, what I mean text nothing is like you text them no context, you just send the audio file, right? And if they're able to write back however they react and they're able to say like, oh, I didn't know you were working on that idea, like if it was a product pitch, or like, oh, that's a really interesting story, can you tell me more about it? Or whatever it is, if there's some sort of traction, momentum, they're even able to get like some sort of inkling of what you're doing out of there, that's a good sign, right? And that means you'll be able to bake it in and you might have something to play with, and then you could reach out and get some more feedback on the phone with them or something. But it allowed you to kind of like poke really quick and really free, like, is there even a thing there, right? And if you have, so that's again, for a comedian could use that, a storyteller could use that, meaning like a writer or someone that was kind of using like the language or words really dependent on how you're going to communicate a story. Now, if you're in a medium that allows you to leverage imagery, right? Let's say you did have that story and it's that 2 minute story is 300 words, right? The beautiful thing about images is, wow, you could probably remove 170 of those words.
Yeah.
Right. By even figuring out what image you could say, right? Or what image you could show that actually helps you remove a lot of that language and evoke something. What color could you use? Mm-hmm. What music could you use? Like, you're using all these different things. And so that can feel really complicated when you're thinking about getting into video software or editing or all that. And it is, right? And yeah, there's tools that are becoming more and more accessible. But if you just think of like, hey, I'm going to sketch some really basic stuff out on some post-it notes, and I'm just going to hit record on the video app. And I'm not going to edit anything. I'm just going to record this, and I'm going to fully dive into that character. So that pitch, whatever it is, I'm just going to bring you into that world and I'm going to record that story or that idea, and it's unedited, like a 90 second take, boom. If it's under 2 minutes, you can probably still even text that to someone and share it with them. And when we mentioned earlier, the layering that with music or other things, right? What I love about that method is you can still do that without bringing other software. So if you do that by your computer, let's say, you could play music in the background, right? You could play some jazz music, or you could even tee the music up to like start at a certain time. So you are recording the post-it notes that have the imagery, you're narrating what it is, and then you know halfway through you want this, you know, orchestral music to pop on. You just hit play on your computer, and that's capturing the audio on your phone,
right?
And you've just created this thing that now has emotion
and experience for people.
It's an experience, and it's unraveling in time, which is the, you know, if that's the medium you're playing with, that's what you want to be prototyping, right? Not reading a script,
right?
Right. And so many people will show me, like, if you talk about writing a 2 minute video and you're looking at a script, it's like fade up, right? It's like, why are we saying that now? Like, just show me that. It's so quick to do that. Why be like, oh, music starts, you know, music rises in the background. Just do it. You can do it and you'll know. Like that might sound great. You read that in the script, you're like, yeah, that sounds good.
Right.
But what I want to know is, how does that actually make you feel? And I now have the tools to really do that super quick. And you know, some of the prototypes that you mentioned earlier that we've even run back and forth with, right?
Yeah.
It's like in the very, very early stages, like that's all I'm going for. If I know I'm working on something that I want people to feel more confident or inspired or whatever it is, like we're just throwing stuff at the wall, right? And it, like I have some ideas of like what music would work for that, but really I want to get more ideas from people like you or whoever I'm bringing along to work to figure out like, hey, just throw some stuff up there. And if I'm feeling inspired, maybe, and then, you know, as the design team, we need to figure out like, was that the music that made me feel inspired? Was it the imagery that you were, you know, evoking through the words or through the actual images? Like, what is making that feeling happen?
Yeah.
And what is making that connection happen? And then, like, from there, you grab one jigsaw piece from that prototype, one jigsaw piece from the other prototype, and you're slowly kind of, like, putting things together.
Yeah.
To make then what would eventually be, you know, your final story or film or whatever it is. Mm. But you were able to make sure you were hitting that feeling right away, or at least exploring it right away through these super quick prototypes.
Yeah, and when we do this, it's a way of honing that message, and as you're developing that story, having a more defined sense of what's working and what needs to change as you go, so that you don't end up, you know, having worked on something for 2 years only to show it for the first time and be like, oh man,
yeah,
this didn't work.
Yeah. And I would say like, there's, I would say it's honing the message, but it's really honing the feeling. Like I think lots of people that get into storytelling, it's, you need to get a message through. Absolutely. Like that's what you're trying to do.
Feeling is much better.
But if you, well, it's not that it's much better. That's the thing, that's the glue.
Yeah.
So that's the thing that's going to take that along. They're going to take that along with them because of the feeling you created, not because of the message. So when we talk about that tagline, right? The message is, you know, what if Stanford wasn't just a time in your life, but a lifetime? Yeah, that's a message and it's relatively easy to understand. But the reason that works is because most people that you're playing that message with have a feeling, typically a good one, of college, right? There's nostalgia there. They love it. And then like, they're like, wait, well, that's a really exciting idea because I love my time at college and it was so formative. And yeah, there's really tricky times, but is this? And then like, yeah, I remember when I was 30, I was like kind of lost in my career and I like contemplating grad school or whatever it was. And so like, you've now cracked open through the message and through the feeling something that's like really resonating with people.
Yeah.
And now they want to have a conversation about it more with you. And now they've also, because of the simplicity of that message, but because of the depth and complexity of the feeling, they also want to share that message. Mm. Right. And they can, and it's easy to take along with them. Like, stop on a, you know, on a stop sign. That's an easy message. That's honed, you know, like it's like super clear. Yeah. Right. But it's like, and I think that's, you know, the same thing with politics. You know, you see these things where it's like messaging is super important, but it is all about how you're making people feel.
Yeah.
And it's not one or the other. It's how you make sure that those are being baked in together so that if you want your message to not just resonate, but have people amplify it for you, it needs to be super clean and simple so that they can share it. That was the other great thing about that Stanford one, is like people could then hear that from David and then go
tell a friend.
Yeah. And David, I remember when he said he really knew it was working when it would come back to him and it stayed in that form.
Yep.
Right. And so that when you know a story that you can tell, right. And we've seen that through history, through mankind, like the stories. And that's why there's actually so few, there's like a handful of great story spine, right? It's like there's a handful of stories and story arcs that we know work, because when you put it in that form and get people to feel this way, it can like go out and come back to you and stay true to its shape or form. And so prototyping early and often to see, like, can you boomerang a story and have it come back to you and be what you intended? Then you're on to something good.
I love that. All right, well, so we're going to wrap up the main show here with one last question. But before I do that, Seamus, where can people go to find you if they want to check out Only People, your media company? Where should we send them?
Onlypeople.media is the website for Only People Media. And then I'm just kind of hanging out on the internet with sporadic behavior. So okay. You'll see me, Seamus Uhart, on any channel. But speaking of narratives, that's one thing that I'm trying to figure out. I'm trying to figure out how I use the internet, man.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know. What? Maybe in the after hours show we can talk about
that. Yeah, that's a great idea. We're going to be doing a post show with Seamus. He's going to stick around for 10-15 minutes. The post show is available to those who support the show on Patreon.
Support it.
Patreon subscription platform. Pledge as little as $2 a month, and you get access to all the post shows and additional episodes. So if you want to check that out, go on over to patreon.com/AustinMeyerFilms. Seamus, to wrap up the show, what do you want to leave people with in terms of becoming a better storyteller? How do you suggest people become a better storyteller? I know we've been talking about this. I know we've been talking about this all show. But if you had like one last little magic dust to spread upon all our listeners, a little bit of advice if they want to become better storytellers in whatever medium they're telling stories.
I think we tend to try to figure out whether the stories we're telling ourselves or the stories we're trying to shape, like how to get to the happy ending, right? And I think one of the things that I'm constantly telling students and people that I work with, or you know, whoever it is really like not just embracing, but finding the low point, right? And really digging into that. And I think any storyteller that's listening to this, I think that's kind of like known and obvious, but I think anyone that's like getting into that for the first time, or even like trying to tell stories, like you don't necessarily realize that whatever high you want to hit can only go as high as the low that you hit. Right. So there's like this like direct relationship. Like if you think of it as a graph, or I always think of it like audio waves, like your highest high can only be the amplitude of like your lowest low. And there's a storytelling exercise that we do at the D School that's literally like high, low, high. So you kind of like graph out this experience that you had. And then you literally look for a moment that was a high moment that then went to low, then goes to high. And that is like a great place to start with story shapes. And so if you're writing a story, if let's say you're an author or you're making a film and there's no transformation from high to low, then you're probably not working with something that is going to resonate with people. And the reason for that is people connect on those struggles when things go wrong. That's an easy entry into empathy, right? And that is where the connection happens. And I think lots of people they either are telling a good story and they never really get into like the dirt, or they just tell the dirt and they never get into the happy bits. And I think it's finding that rhythm, like really good filmmakers, really good musicians, right? And so in music, it's like, I mean, you play music. And so when you think of just like, you know, a three chord song structure, right? It's like you're building tension and then you're resolving it, right? And that's the exact same thing. That's a high and a low, right? So when you're writing a book, right? If you can kind of build tension, resolve it, and then maybe build a little bit more tension right before the end of the chapter, Mm-hmm. That's going to make them want to go to the next chapter.
Right.
Right. And if you're making a film, and again, you're building that tension, you resolve a little bit of it. Oh, Woody and Buzz are friends now. Oh, wait, but now, like, there's this new character that there's, like, a lot, like, if you're constantly playing almost within every single sequence, this ability to go high, low, high, or high, low, high, low, high, low, right, like,
yeah. Low, high, low.
Right.
Yeah.
Just playing with that, like, transformative thing of, up and down, and like creating tension and then releasing tension and creating tension and releasing tension. Like that's it. Like that's the magic across mediums, right? When you are able to create something that has that kind of, oh, I'm creating tension and I'm gonna resolve it. And then I'm gonna create some more tension. And then resolve it, you can kind of pull people going through. So it's like, don't forget the bad parts. Yeah. And don't forget to go there and play around with it and get dirty and get messy and explore that again through whatever your medium is. And through that, like, find your voice in doing that, because that's the thing where it's like, that's nothing new. Quincy Jones had a great thing of like, there's only 12 notes. Right? Like, it's not what you do, it's how you do it. Right? And so, like, creating tension and releasing it, that's nothing new to storytelling. And if you're going to try to not do that, you're crazy. It's like, I'm going to make a hit record without making music on these instruments. Like, that's ridiculous. Figure out how you do that. How do you create tension and then resolve it? How do you do your high, low, high? Those are timeless tactics that works. Now figure out how you make that work and what's unique about your voice in doing that.
Beautiful. Seamus Hart.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, this was fun.
That's it for episode 30 of the Austin Meyer Podcast. Thank you to Seamus Hart for coming on the show and to you for listening. If you are looking for more ideas on the craft of storytelling and the opportunity to win a $200 camera bag from Think Tank Photo, I am doing a holiday giveaway for one random person who is subscribed to my monthly newsletter. My newsletter will drop into your email once a month with reflections on storytelling, experiences from the field, and resources to help you take your storytelling game to the next level. So to sign up for that, click on the link in the description or go to bit.ly/AustinMeyer newsletter. That's bit.ly/AustinMeyer newsletter. Lastly, Seamus did stick around for a great post show in which we talked about FOMO on social media.
I have friends that are incredible photographers, and like, I'll see the stuff that they're doing, and then I'm like, should I have been a photographer? And it's like, for no reason. It's like, the answer is no, right? But there's no reason that I need to have that moment
right
in my life now.
We talked about his experience working with Will.i.am of the Black Eyed Peas.
I was lucky enough to have an experience early on in my career where I was on the John Lennon Educational Tour bus and we were working with Will.i.am.
And we also dove into some of the stories that he is loving and getting inspiration from these days. So to get access to the post show, head on over to patreon.com/AustinMeyerFilms. For as little as $2 a month, you can access all the post shows and additional episodes that appear in a private podcast feed. The link to the Patreon page is also linked in the description. All right, that's all from me today. I will see you soon on another episode, and until then, go out and tell some stories.